Coming up on today's show.
One of the first places we went to was the Ryman. And I remember just, you can feel the magic when you walk in that building. And I sat on the edge of my pew the whole show and thought, man, I can't imagine ever playing there. And now here we are about to play it.
Probably ought to be settled down by now. Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location in Alabama at the 4th Lake Martin Songwriters Festival, my guest is a Nashville-based singer, songwriter, guitar player who has a new single coming out soon. She has written for and had major label cuts with other artists, and in 2020 signed her first publishing deal. At the end of this month, she will open for Terry Clark at the Ryman Auditorium, and in September and October, she will open for Ian Munsick in Colorado, New Mexico, and Idaho. She has even performed at the legendary Bluebird Cafe in Nashville. You've been hearing a song of hers called Drunk Thoughts. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Jenna LeMaster.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. Thank you for making time to sit and talk with me today.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. This is going to be fun. Let's get started by having you share with the audience first about the song of yours that was just playing called Drunk Thoughts.
Yes, Drunk Thoughts. Man, this one is such a special one to me. I guess it was just a magical day that we wrote it. I wrote it with two co-writers and now dear friends of mine, Lee Starr and Whitney Duncan. And it was actually the first write that we ever had. Mm. And Whitney came in and she was talking about over the weekend, her husband had said, a drunk man's words are a sober man's thoughts. And she was like, I wonder if we could write something about that. And we just kind of started throwing ideas around in the room. And one of us at one point said, what about drunk thoughts, sober truth? And I guess our creativity just went wild and we started crafting this story around the thought, if a drunk man's words are a sober man's thoughts, what are some things that even the drunk man wouldn't say out loud? Like things that were so vulnerable that you wouldn't even say at that point. And we just crafted this story around that. And it's been so much fun to kind of see now that it's out there in the world, all the people that have reached out and been like, man, that is my story. Like, thank you. I found so much healing in that. And that's the highest compliment you could get as a writer as an artist, that somebody else could put their story in your song. So
as you were saying that, though, I'm thinking, well, maybe if there's enough Cosmicos flowing, we were talking about Russell Sutton before we pressed record on this, maybe then even a drunk person would say that. Right. But I was listening to you intently while on the other side of my brain, I was trying to sort through that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, wait, is that... All right, pay attention to the guest, Bruce. So that is cool how y'all looked at that and said, all right, now wait a minute. It's a good starting point, but let's sprinkle our songwriter dust on it and
That's
see
right.
what kind of a turn we can take with that.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, that's one of those cases of where a lot of times on this show, I'll say, if this were a video podcast across the bottom of the screen, it would be flashing results not typical, because you said it was your first write with them.
I know. It's so crazy. I mean, I guess a lot of people don't know, when you do move to town and you break into the songwriting community, you start writing a lot of songs. You write Monday through Friday, and sometimes that's with people that you are familiar with and you've kind of established a creative relationship already. And sometimes it's people that you have never met, you have no idea who they are. And you walk into a room and you say, hey, nice to meet you. And then it's like, okay, tell me about what you're going through. What's your latest, you know, traumatic event that happened? And a lot of times writing sessions are kind of like therapy sessions, I guess. But
at the same time, a lot of times you just do it and you go, okay, well, you know, I didn't really vibe with those folks. Yeah. And the next day you go and do a write with someone for the first time and you go, wow, not only did we write a terrific song, but I really liked them. Like the vibe was just in the room. I want to write with those folks again. And so that's why I go back to results not typical, that here were these folks that you'd never written with before. And you come out with drunk thoughts that you go, we all just wrote a great song here.
Yeah, that is the beauty of it, because, you know, it really doesn't matter who somebody is or the success that they have or haven't had yet. There's been times when I've gone in with writers that have been extremely successful and writers that I look up to, and they are so good at what they do. And for some reason, we just don't jive together. And sometimes you walk in with somebody who may be a little greener and new to town, and it's like, wow, somehow we were, you know, on the same page or whatnot. It's always just kind of a gamble. You never know what you're walking into. And I think that's makes it pretty cool.
But I wonder, though, in my 10 and a half years of doing this show every week and talking to so many Nashville people, everyone always says it's all about the song, or it starts with the song, or words to that effect. So if you go into every write with the attitude of, look, the bottom line here is we got to write a good song, that sounds good, but I feel, and I'm putting this in the form of a question, yeah, I feel like the human element does take over and psychology starts playing on with you and says, yeah, but you don't know who these people are when you're going into a write with someone for the first time. Mm-hmm. And so as much as you might say, hey, let's just write a great song today, it's like, yeah, that's the goal, but I don't know who these people are. And that guy's looking at me kind of funny. And this one here keeps looking at their phone. And so now you're getting distracted. So is it like, no, Bruce, you put the song first, you'll be okay. Or does that human element kind of enter the room on its own?
That's such a good question. I guess all can be true. And sometimes all of that doesn't matter. I know that's not exactly, you know, a helpful answer. But I mean, ultimately, the goal is to go in every single day and come out with a great song. That doesn't happen always. It actually doesn't happen, at least for me, the majority of the time. Mm. It takes a lot of decent songs to get a good song, and it takes a lot of good songs to get a great song.
Mm, I like that.
So I haven't really been able to pinpoint what it takes. I guess that's all what we're searching for.
Yeah.
What does it take to make a great song? And so sometimes, you know, different aspects in the room can affect or cannot affect that. You can walk in and somebody's on their phone the whole write, and it doesn't really matter because you and the other person, the third person, are on a really good road. So it's like there's so many variables that come into play.
Or that person that's on their phone looks up long enough to throw out one great line that you go, oh my gosh, yes, that's it.
Yes.
That's it. But let's go back to the human element, because you said it doesn't happen regularly. Of course, mm-hmm. It doesn't happen regularly for any songwriter in Nashville. I don't care who you are. So how do you wake up in the morning and go, it's a new day, it's a new song?
Well,
or is it exactly that?
I mean, it can be addicting too. It's something you're chasing. Somebody told me when I moved to town, you better make sure you love it because it's not going to love you back. Mm. And I think that there is some truth and wisdom in that from the standpoint of that part is difficult. It's a struggle. But the good days are so good. They outweigh all of the bad. And, you know, I've had the blessing of having to work other jobs and having to work really hard and be outside and work physical labor. I grew up on a big horse ranch, and I still feel like a bad day of writing songs is better than a good day of cleaning stalls. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Does, and I promise audience and Jenna for that matter, we will move on, but this is fascinating discussion. Do the other writers know when y'all did a song and you're done, it's like, it was just okay. Like, no one's going to say it out loud, but when I'm sitting here talking to you because you're in front of me and I'm saying, you're walking out of there and you're like, oh, it just really was not the best song. Or do the others know it too? Are the others walking out going, I'm not going to say it out loud, but that probably wasn't the best song ever?
I think so. I think especially when you have relationship, when they're writers that you have become friends with and know very well, I think a lot of the times we end up writing with people that we're all kind of on the same page. And there's something so cool about getting on a good song or a good idea, and then, you know, lines are getting thrown out and guitar riffs are getting thrown out, and things are so good that you guys are like high-fiving after each line and being like, oh my gosh, we're doing it. Like, this is written to the wall. That's very exciting. Now, what's crazy is that art is also subjective. So what is a good song to you or to me might not be the most successful. Like, I'm a huge fan of a lot of deep cuts on artist records. And those never saw the light of day on a, you know, they were never singled. They were never on the radio. A lot of people might not even know these songs. So, you know, I think that's a great song. Does the world think that's a great song? I don't know.
And if you're doing a write where there's three of you and you don't think it's that great of a song, someone else might be going home saying, I love this song that we wrote today, to the point where the next day they're going, do y'all mind? I think I want to cut that song on this project I'm doing. And you're like, I mean, yeah, sure. Go ahead and do it. Awesome.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's so crazy. I mean, there's so many stories of writers that are like, man, I walked out of their room and was like, what a terrible song. And the next thing they know, it's being singled and on the radio and they're crying all the way to the bank. But
so you started to mention something that, let's change the subject, because you're a long way from home. I don't mean Lake Martin, Alabama versus Nashville, Tennessee. Heck, that's less than 5 hours from here. Tell the audience what I'm getting at. You were originally from way out west and then actually moved somewhere else that we'll get to before finally heading off to Music City.
I am. I'm from Placerville, California, which is Northern California, a town pretty much directly between Sacramento and Tahoe.
Oh, that's way up there.
So in the foothills of, yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Where the gold rush started.
Pretty cool. And it was a family consisting of?
My parents and my siblings, which are triplets, actually. They are 2 years older than me, so my poor mom.
Three girls, three boys, or a mix?
Two girls and one boy.
Two girls and one boy.
Yep.
And then Jenna, and so there were four of you.
Yeah.
But it was a rodeo family.
Mm-hmm. My aunt was a professional barrel racer.
Mm-hmm.
So that event is you're on horseback and it's a timed event. You run your horse in an arena. You make a cloverleaf pattern around three barrels and fastest time wins.
Mm.
So bunch of country bumpkins, let me tell you.
But your dad also did it, or your mom also did it, or what?
It was really our aunt that brought us into the horse world.
Okay.
My dad grew up a sugar beet farmer. His dad was a sugar beet farmer. So he grew up in the sugar beet fields and eventually did some truck driving for that company and everything. So they were used to the country lifestyle, but they say it all started with a free horse because my mom was selling a couch on Craigslist at the time.
Okay.
And somebody had bid on it and they said, well, I can't afford the couch, but if you're open to doing a trade deal, I could trade you a horse.
You know, the first time, and I've been fortunate to go many, many, many times, the first time that I ever went to the Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival, I won the guitar. You know, they were doing what do they call that? Silent auction.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been gone and they called me. I was back home in Tampa and said, you won the guitar. And so it's the same thing. It's like, that's how I got started playing this guitar, because like, I want a guitar and I didn't know how to play. And I'm like, well, I guess I got to learn how to play now. I'm not just going to have this as a decoration. So lo and behold, they trade this horse. And it's like, well, I guess we got to
learn to ride it.
Learn how to ride it.
Yeah.
But help me out now. So from California, you moved to Texas or your family moved to Texas?
So originally, I guess I have to say, I'm super fortunate and super blessed. All of me and my siblings had supportive parents and really helped, you know, keep our dreams alive. And we're always supportive of whatever you guys want to do, go chase it. So started competing when I was really little. All of us did. All of us siblings. And climbed the ranks from junior rodeo to high school rodeo, and then eventually started kind of dabbling on the professional rodeo circuit. Well, me and my sister knew we were the two that wanted to kind of take it a little further and chase the dream farther, and knew that in order to do that best, we would have to move somewhere that was more centrally located. So the rodeo circle kind of goes in a big circle around the U.S. Over the course of a year. And so it was just going to be way more helpful to be somewhere central than on the West Coast.
But we are here on a music podcast during a songwriters festival to talk about music. So we haven't heard you say anything about music. You've been talking about rodeo and California, and now you move because you and your sister are going to really pursue this. But what were things looking like music-wise for you in Texas? And by the way, how long were you there? Because clearly, as much as you were focused on pro rodeo, there had to be enough that you were doing music-wise that eventually you would leave all that to go do music in Nashville.
Yeah. I was there 3 to 4 years, somewhere in that time frame. Mm-hmm. What's crazy is that I didn't grow up, you know, a child prodigy of music. Or like all the people in Nashville when I moved there, everyone was like, yes, I've wanted to do this since, you know, before I could walk.
Yeah, and my daddy did it and his daddy did it. There's 3 generations of music and guitar playing. It goes back to, you know, the turn of the 1900s.
And I was kind of like, oh boy, that's great. And also terrifying because I didn't share that story. I had grown up singing in church, but there wasn't a huge music scene in Northern California where I'm from, and really didn't even know that songwriting was an occupation, you know? And it's when I was living in Texas, me and my sister were working for a cutting horse trainer, and they would have these cowboy church services at the rodeos on the weekends, no matter where we were. And a lot of the times they would have a preacher there to preach the sermon, and they wouldn't have any worship beforehand. And I was like, I grew up singing in church, and I have my grandpa's guitar in the trailer. I don't really know how to play it, but I'll learn. Like, I can totally do that. And so that's where everything started. But really, once I picked up that guitar and started learning, I could not put it down. So we were in Texas. I was playing all the time. Whenever I wasn't working the horses, I was practicing what new country song I, you know, could learn. Mm-hmm. And rodeo and country music go hand in hand a lot of the times. Sure. There was, you know, a lot of rodeos that had concerts, and I just became totally captivated by it and felt, you know, that it was even deeper than just a passion. It felt like a calling.
Wow.
And so the horse trainer that I was working for in Texas, he was very encouraging. He actually told me, you know, hey, I know this is what you want to do. You're, you know, competing and all this, but I really think you ought to think about pursuing that, pursuing songwriting and singing. Like, you seem to be, you know, pretty good at it. And I had no idea what that even looked like, but.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, by the time you moved to Nashville, had you been writing any music in Texas? Had you been releasing anything? Did you have a band? Were you out gigging, whether solo, duo, trio, band, anything? And she's shaking her head no already, audience.
No gigging. I know. It's insane. It really is so crazy. I had begun writing. That was kind of, I think that'll always be my first love of, you know, the music business, of all the different things that go along with being an artist.
So what finally pushed you over the edge and made you decide, I'm going to move to Nashville? And I guess I had planned to ask you, was it an emotional decision? But now that I find that it was only you and your sister, I mean, not that there wouldn't be some emotion there of, bye, sis, I'm leaving. But it could also be the emotion of like, wow, I thought I was going to be a pro rodeo star and I'm walking away from that. And by the way, please answer these questions. Did you know anyone in Nashville? Or when you tell me now, what made you finally decide? Did you just go there cold and didn't know a soul?
I knew no one. So me and my sister moved to Texas. My whole family moved at one point.
Oh, they did.
And then my whole family moved back to California. And it was just me and my sister in Texas. I know, kind of crazy. We all just going everywhere. So I started not doing very well competitively in the rodeo world. My main horse got injured, and it's a very blue collar American sport. And when you're not winning, you're not making any money. And I just felt my passion for it dying. You know, that was a dream that I could see the end of the road. Like, I had my 5-year and 10-year goal list planned. I wanted to qualify for the NFR, which is the National Finals Rodeo, and kind of begin to make a name for myself and be able to give clinics to kids and have my own line of tack and all these different things of making a business from that. And when that started to die, it was a little bit confusing, you know, like there was part of it that felt like giving up on that dream. There was part of it that felt like, oh my gosh, my parents have been, you know, so supportive and have invested and have, you know, given everything to make all of us kids, you know, it just felt like, okay, I really got to like sit down and pray about this and figure out where I'm supposed to go. And me and my sister ended up moving back to California. At that point, I had written a handful of songs, and I was like, Mom, Dad, you know, I want to play these songs for you. They were like, whoa, those are amazing. I can assure you they were not. But they were like, I don't know what it means to pursue that, but let me connect you with somebody here that we grew up going to church with who had lived in Nashville and had kind of worked in the Christian music scene. And that's a somewhat different world than the country music scene. But he kind of explained, you know, what that would look like, that you kind of got to move to Nashville if you want to do that. You got to be present to win. You have to learn the ropes of that industry. You have to begin co-writing and collaborating. When I had first met with him, he said, okay, so I hear you're a country music artist. And I said, well, you know, I haven't actually released anything. And he's like, okay, well, like, you know, you've been writing for a long time. And I said, well, no, I just kind of picked it up. He's like, okay, well, you've taken voice lessons and guitar lessons. And I was like, well, no, not exactly. And so he stopped me right there. And I was like, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I would highly discourage you from thinking that you're going to be able to move to Nashville and pursue this.
Whoa.
And so he's like, but if you want to meet with me, I have 30 minutes next week where you could come. And I kind of felt like a dog with my tail between my legs, like, yeah, that was stupid, Jenna. What are you thinking? But I still was like, you know what? Go meet with him. So I did, and I played him a few things, and he was like, you know what? Okay. Well, if you really want to do this, this is what you got to do. But I think you might have a shot. You might have a chance. So,
wow, so cool.
So then it was a very short window from the time that I moved home from Texas and then moved to Nashville. I ended up calling the trainer that I'd worked for in Texas that kind of encouraged me to pursue it. And I told him, hey, I'm thinking about moving to Nashville. Do you know anywhere where I could get a job? Like, I have no idea what I'm going to do when I move there. I'll be willing to do anything, but if there's something horse related, that's the work I've grown up doing my whole life. If there's a ranch that needs somebody to work horses or train horses. And he said, well, call this lady named Barbara. And so I called this lady named Barbara and said, hi, my name's Jenna LeMaster, and I'm thinking about moving to town because I want to pursue writing songs and singing country music, but I'm looking for a job. Do you have anything available? You know, I know how to, I've worked in the cutting horse world, I've worked in the rodeo world. And she said, well, actually, I have a farm in Franklin, Tennessee, and let me connect you with our head trainer that leases that, and he runs his cutting horse operation out of it. So I called him, and he was like, you know what? Thanks for calling. I'm not really looking for anyone. And I was kind of like, you know what? That's okay.
Oh,
maybe this isn't what I am supposed to do.
A plot twist.
And I was planning to go out to Nashville, I think a month or two later, to visit for the first time with my parents. And he called back and was like, hey, is there any chance you could come out and interview and ride and, you know,
wow,
I need somebody for this job. And I was like, I will be in Nashville in 2 days.
What year was that?
Oh, that's a good question. This was 9 years ago.
2015.
Yes.
Okay, because audience, now that you have all of that, okay, you just heard everything that Jenna went through and where she was. If you think about the story where she said that he says, well, you know, you've written all these songs. Oh, not really. Well, obviously you've taken voice and guitar lessons. Oh, not really. Right. There she is probably saying all that to that guy in probably 2015.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden she's showing up in 2015 in Nashville. Yay, I'm going to work at a cutting horse farm, and I guess I'm going to dip my toe in the water of this crazy thing called the music business. When we all think back 4 years ago, our thoughts immediately go to the pandemic.
Yeah.
For you, 2020 is only 5 years after this girl shows up in Nashville going, I don't know anybody here, but I'm going to give this a try. And you get signed to your first publishing deal.
I know.
How in the world did that happen?
I really have to give credit to my publishers because they signed me. Well, I had been there. I'd been in Nashville. I worked on the farm for my first year there. And then eventually, actually in a freak accident, got bucked off and broke my elbow. And that was very nerve-wracking to me at the time because I had my first full band gig the next day like, how am I going to do this? But went to the ER and got a cast and got some pain meds and went to band rehearsal and played the gig the next day.
Wow.
But it was really, now looking back, I feel like that was God's way of being like, nope, I didn't move you there to do that. So if you're not going to leave your job, I will make sure that you do. And it was during that time period that I really got to start meeting songwriters and start kind of plugging in. Mm. It's a very tight-knit community. So, you know, it can be a little bit intimidating thinking, how am I going to be able to get in the room with these writers and whatnot? And you just, you got to be there. You got to go out. You got to go to writer's rounds. You got to find people that inspire
you. Put yourself out there.
And it was during that time period that I did that. And I met my publishers, well, it probably would have been in 2019, and had started the process of meeting with them, and they were setting me up on co-writes.
Okay.
And we got to the point where they were like, okay, we'd love to do this deal. And then the pandemic hit, and they still signed me in... This was May, I believe, of 2020. So this was so cool. I know. I'm so thankful.
Divine order.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
There's no other answer for any of my journey of how I got here, because it just, it says a lot about them too, that they would stick out their neck and sign me during that time.
I'm joined today on location in Alabama at the 4th Lake Martin Songwriters Festival by singer, songwriter, guitar player Jenna LeMaster. Visit her official website at jennalemaster.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. I am about to ask her about the new song she has coming out soon, so get ready to hear all about that shortly. Equally important, though, will be to pre-save that song. Give Jenna a follow on Spotify. For that matter, use the logos on jennalemaster.com to follow her on Facebook, X, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. If you are or will be in Nashville on August 29th, she will open for Terry Clark that night at the Ryman Auditorium. Additionally, look at the shows section of jennalemaster.com for dates and information regarding her opening for Ian Munsick out west in September and October. Incidentally, the music tab on her website will give you a list of platforms from which you can get her music. Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, YouTube Music, Pandora, and the iTunes Store. Speaking of platforms, this morning I was live for 3 hours on the Owl app. Now again, don't think of going live in the Facebook or Instagram or TikTok sense. It simply means that I marked myself as available and ready to take calls through there, and it put my picture on the home screen of that app as one of the experts who users on Owl could call. Owl, it's like the bird, except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. I do actively use LinkedIn, but I've said before, why would I just limit myself to one professional networking platform? You don't only use Facebook, you don't only use Instagram, you don't only use TikTok. So get yourself on Owl and make helpful connections for your career instantly. Here is how to do that. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section
and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help, Now a Phone App Call Away. The OWL app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It's a required field. Get on OWL and make valuable connections for your career. Jenna, since I teased it in there, let's get to it. Very soon, you have a new single coming out. What is the title? What is the song about? Who did you work with on it? Give us all the details.
Yes, I'm so excited. We just went in the studio, actually, and cut a new batch of songs. But the first one that we will be releasing is a song called Truth Is. On all of this music, on all the music that I've done and will be putting out, I've had the pleasure of working with Paul Franklin and Glenn Worf producing. They are brilliant and incredible human beings.
And Glenn is a Grammy winner.
Glenn is a Grammy winner. Glenn is, he is a gentle giant, is how I put him. But just incredible musicians. They're both absolutely legendary, have played on everyone's favorite songs, are such a staple in country music. And I knew that when I was forming my sound, people who have been there and done it and helped create country music is who I wanted to work with. So I'm very honored that they took me on, but got to work with them, a bunch of fantastic musicians. But the song Truth is probably one of my more heavier songs from a content perspective. I wrote it again with Lee Starr and Whitney Duncan. They've become some of my favorite co-writers. And I guess it kind of just came from possibly watching a little bit of the news. I don't know if you've done that lately. It's really fun if you enjoy anxiety and depression. And I kid. But really, I mean, there is a lot of fear-based media, right? And that can be a little bit overwhelming. And I had a conversation with somebody who's experienced a lot of life. They're in their 80s. And I was talking to her and I just said, wow, you know, these are kind of scary times, aren't they? And she was like, well, I mean, not necessarily. Yeah, I guess, but not necessarily. Just had so much peace about it. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah. We've been through a lot before. And it was just such a reminder that, like, that's so true. Like, the world has kind of always been hard, you know?
Yeah.
And it may not have always been as loud, but it has always been, we've always had difficult
times.
There's
challenges if you look for them, and there's bigger challenges if you let them become that.
That's right.
It's all perspective. It's all mindset. Just back up, though, because listening to what you're talking about, I assume that when you said this is a little bit heavier for me content-wise, so you're talking about the message in the song. You're not talking about the sound. This isn't
right.
a hard-driving...
So sorry.
Power...
No.
Yeah, okay.
Not sonically.
Yeah.
Really from a lyrical standpoint. Okay. And the song is really just about, I mean, you can either look at the world through a fear perspective, and that doesn't always create the best human in me. And when I am my best, it's when I flip that coin over, and that looks like peace and a little bit of resilience and never give up, and ultimately the hope that the good guy still wins in the end.
I love it.
I just kind of poured out my heart again to Lee and Whitney and was talking about that. And we came up with this song, and I've played it out live a few times, and it seems to have really resonated with people. And
y'all wrote that song.
Yes.
But before the break, when I was giving out all your online destinations and talking about the OWL app, you were talking about your publishing deal in 2020. At the very start of this episode, I mentioned that you have written four and had major label cuts with other artists.
Yes.
So tell the audience about some of those songs, but also, is there a clear difference in your mindset, or talk about mindset, when you're writing for another artist versus writing for yourself?
Yes and no. Sometimes, you know, at this point where I'm at, I try to come up with ideas that I would want to sing as an artist, but sometimes, you know, ideas are everywhere. And I try to catch them whenever I hear one that I'm inspired by. It could be something somebody says. And sometimes that isn't for me. And sometimes I have an idea that I think is for me and we start writing it. And I know pretty quickly, this isn't going in the direction that I want.
Pick a song that you've had cut by someone else and tell us how that one came to be in terms of, did you know you were writing for that person or was it?
Yeah. The first one that comes to mind, Place For Me, that was recorded by Casey Tindall and Dylan Marlowe. I love that song. I love Casey. She's a dear friend and a great artist. And that was something that was heavy on her heart. She was, you know, just contemplating her life. And she was like, you know what? Am I going to make it to heaven? I don't know. I'm looking at my life. What are my choices? And she said, but you know what? If my granddaddy's up there, then I think if there's a place for him, there's a place for me. And I loved that. I love her. I love her heart. And she had kind of started working something up. And we wrote that song that day with Jason Nix and Jason Gant, actually. And that just was Casey. You know, you start writing something and you know she's a, you know, a little spitfire, rock and roll, country queen.
No,
and
you're doing a really good job, though, of painting that picture of in that right. Now it's, okay, we're going there for her.
Yeah.
And this is her idea, and I love it, and I'm on board with it, and I'm going to bring great ideas to it. But I know this is totally different than if I sat down at home and said, I'm going to write for myself today. Now, you might still have those ideas.
Yeah.
Well, I had this idea the other day. Yeah. Didn't know what I was going to do with it, but maybe it belongs in your song.
100%. And when you think of the amount of songs that we write compared to how many songs we record on a record, like, you know, we went in to cut an EP of 5 or 6 songs. Well, I've written however many songs this year already. You know, it's a very slim number. So you could have a song that you wrote and you're like, well, that could be for me. I could sing it, but it didn't make my top 5. So could it be for somebody else?
I see.
In the beginning, when I first moved to Nashville, I was very precious about songs. Mm-hmm. And, oh no, I can't imagine, you know, letting this one go. Now, I try to be more open, but I also try to listen to my gut. And when I write a song that I'm like, ooh, it would kill me to see somebody else sing this story. Like, I really want to sing this story.
But I'll bet you when you first got to town, you were also naive about the value of having a cut with someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Had no idea. I mean, there's so much. You don't know what you don't know, but I think a cut is good for everybody involved.
Exactly.
It's good for the artist. It's good for you as a writer. I'm so thankful. Ashen Craft, she gave me my first 2 major label cuts, and that helped me so much on so many different levels. It gave me confidence. It kind of made me feel a little bit validated, like, okay, you can do it. Okay, you're doing it, you're really doing
it. A little bit of street cred.
As some songwriters that maybe I wasn't able to get in the room with before then were like, okay, well, let's give this girl a shot. Let's try
I like it. And I apologize, audience, I know I'm flipping back and forth here, but here's a little secret. Jenna's upcoming new song, Truth Is, already has a live performance video posted, if y'all want a sneak preview. That got posted on your YouTube channel on July 3rd, and I'm guessing that the night that you performed that, you knew, let's get this filmed so we can put something online to show people what I'm releasing next?
Actually, no.
No.
That performance, that was from a live Writers Round in Nashville called Southern Rounds. Yep. They're great. They've been very supportive. I'm thankful for
them. Hats off to whoever does their video production. It looks fantastic.
So good. They're very pro. They're awesome. Love them. That was actually the first time I ever played that song live.
Wow.
And that was just kind of the great thing about Nashville and Writers Rounds, especially for artists, is that you get to test new material and see, you know, how the crowd reacts and see what people say. And that song was always special to me. But at that point, I didn't even know when I was going to be going in the studio next to record music. So again, just paid attention to the fact that, man, this something feels special about this. I would love to cut it. We'll see. And as everything worked out, I was able to record it. And
you have a great quality video that you go,
this just makes too much sense. Let's put this on YouTube.
Yeah, let's test it out. Let's see what, you know, it's one thing to hear what Nashville thinks about something. It's another thing to hear what the rest of the world thinks about something. Yeah. And I value that so much.
Yeah, the people that have something healthy to contribute, not the keyboard warriors who are putting nonsense in the comments, but you're looking and you're going, okay, it's getting a good number of views. It's getting some good feedback. And yeah, so you're going to be playing at the Ryman Auditorium. You've also played at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville. You've even played at the famed Eddie's Attic in Atlanta. Heck, yeah. You've even performed down in Key West, Florida. I'm guessing that was Key West Songwriters Festival.
Yeah.
Thinking back to those rodeo days and cowboy church days, are all of these that I'm reading off pinch me moments?
I can't even tell you, but yes. They are. They're crazy. They were such like a far-fetched dream at one point, and it's like, man, every day I feel like dreams are coming true. It's like, even on the hard days, I think it's such a good thing to look back and be able to have gratitude of like, man, these are the days that I prayed for at one point. And they're here, and I'm living them right now. It's crazy.
And that's why I cited things like rodeo days and cowboy church, that if there was just a twinkle in your eye then about, well, wait a minute, like you said, wait a minute, I can figure out the guitar and I could do a little worship. And then if someone would have whispered in your ear, someday you're going to play at Eddie's Attic, and someday you're going to play at the Bluebird, and someday you're going to play at the Ryman Auditorium, and you'd be like, you got the wrong number. Me?
Totally. I mean, I still feel that way. The Ryman is coming up at the end of August, and I'm already shaking in my boots, but it's going to be very special for me, obviously, for anyone. That stage is iconic, and it's so honoring to even think about being able to step up there. And on my first trip to Nashville with my parents before I had moved, and we were just kind of scoping out the land, had never been, obviously, being on the other side of the country. Mm-hmm. One of the first places we went to was the Ryman. Mm-hmm. And I remember just, you can feel the magic when you walk in that building. And I sat on the edge of my pew the whole show and just took it in and absorbed and thought, man, I can't imagine ever playing there. And now here we are about to play it. Thank
and
you,
so,
Terry Clark.
Right? And it's, they say it's a 10-year town.
Yeah.
And so we look at your journey and we look at how you were saying that you start getting these cuts and all of a sudden it starts opening up some rights that you might not have otherwise gotten and teaches you all kinds of lessons. And now you're building up this resume where people are going to go, okay, who is this girl? Because look at all these things she's doing. She's getting all these cuts. She's releasing new music. She's playing at places like all these that I keep reciting. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, while we're talking about live performances, tonight you're going to make your Lake Martin Songwriters Festival debut.
I know. I'm so excited to be here. This is so fun.
I mean, how cool is that, that your songs that you've created that have brought you across the country have resulted in people are going to hang on your every word in a few hours when you're playing over at Russell Crossroads, listening to this Jenna Master talk about these songs that she's written. Sitting next to some writers that maybe you know, maybe you don't know, and you get to bond with them as much as you get to bond with the crowd.
Yep. I know. It's a living dream come true.
So let's just back up to the upcoming new song, because you said that you went in the studio and recorded a few songs.
Yeah.
So does that mean there's an EP eventually down the road, or is it we're just working on...
I can't spoil it, but I can say that you're on the right track.
Okay. And but I also asked that because, you know, this has become such a singles-driven industry that everybody's putting out a song and they're on some kind of a... Somebody tells them every 6 weeks or someone tells them every 8 weeks. And I wouldn't have been surprised if you told me, no, we're getting a bunch of them in the can, but no, I'm just going to release a few throughout the rest of 2024.
That can be. I mean, I think we'll take it, you know, song by song. I think, you know, there isn't always... this is the path or this is the method, but we'll see if we release a few singles off the EP and then release the full EP or how it goes. But I'm just excited to get new music out there.
I was going to say, quite frankly, I could see the excitement when you were talking about Truth Is, and that's clearly where everything is going right now as it relates to all things Jenna Master music. So it's almost, thank you for asking, Bruce, but let's not get too carried away because the task at hand right now is getting ready for the release of Truth Is.
Yep.
People will hear that tonight.
People will hear that tonight.
Awesome. Awesome. Because I'm going to be there, so I get to hear
Yay!
It. Folks, if you've been listening to the show for a while, firstly, thank you so much. It just really means so, so much to me. Honestly, it does. But that also means that you know that every so often, I will have a guest on where at the end, I will play the same song that was played during the intro. It gives you an opportunity to hear the song both in its entirety and unobstructed. I'm saying all this because that's what we're going to do this week as we close with Jenna's song, Drunk Thoughts, that was playing during the intro. So Jenna, before we wrap this up and I play that all the way through and without talking over it, what else can you tell us about Drunk Thoughts?
I think Drunk Thoughts will always be so special to me and one of my favorite songs because it was the first song that, you know, just tugged at me and said, you have to tell this story. And so it was really the introduction to me and my music and what my sound was. And I think a first release will always be special. And so that was, again, the first taste of what I do, and sadly for my mom, it's a drinking song, but hey, she's learned to accept it. And I mean, it's really not about drinking. It's about being able to get honest. And, you know, I think when you are willing to tell the truth, that's when the healing begins. So
I think that song came out last October.
It did. Yep.
Just talk about, as you started to say, all the emotions, because you get excited because here we go, my first release. But then there's also this, I don't want to say your balloon gets popped, but you have to put aside the excitement to go, wait a minute, are people listening to it? Are people liking it? Are they downloading it? Are they streaming it? Are they commenting? What's happening? And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't just be excited. Now I have to wear my business hat and make sure that it's connecting with people.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. For me, not having any music out there and this being the first time, I had really nowhere to go but up. So anybody listening made me super happy. And I think that ultimately, you know, no matter how successful a song is or isn't, obviously, we hope that it is as successful as it can be, and we work at it and we, you know, try to share it and we try to market it and make sure that it reaches as many people as we can. Ultimately, I think the joy comes from knowing that this is my best work at that time, you know, and I'm proud of it. And I didn't have to compromise. I got to make a record that felt like me, and it was a story that I wanted to share. And that is success to me, that I get to be exactly who I am and put that out there. So
I love it. I love it. What a great way to end. I can't wait to see you perform in a few hours. But for now, thank you so much for making time to sit with me and be a guest on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Bruce. You are wonderful. And like I said, I was just honored to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And folks, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Jenna LeMaster. Do visit her official website at jennalemaster.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Jenna's new single, Truth Is, will be out real soon. Keep up with her online in the lead up to that, and do make sure to pre-save it once that option becomes available. Again, the music tab on her website will give you a whole list of online digital music platforms to get her original songs from. Remember, too, to check the shows page of jennalemaster.com regarding not only August 29th, when she will open for Terry Clark at the Ryman Auditorium, but the four dates out west in September and October, when she will open for Ian Munsick. This morning, I followed Jenna on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and I'm sure she would appreciate you doing the same. On her website, you will see logos for not only those three social media channels, but YouTube and TikTok as well. For that matter, tell Jenna you heard her and her music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Jenna and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once. by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 547. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with original music from Jenna LeMaster. This is the one she just talked about. It's called Drunk Thoughts.
I probably ought to be settled down by now. I probably should have made it farther than this town. I'm young enough to want to chase something new. I'm old enough to know I'm gonna have to make do. Drunk thoughts sold the truth. I wish I didn't want another cigarette. I wish I would have bought another bottle of red. Yeah, I'm a long, long way from the girl. Probably shouldn't be, probably shouldn't be, probably shouldn't be.